Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Welcome back to our podcast series, Mindfulness Where Dharma Meets Practice. This is the 8th of 11 talks in the series and the second of 3 talks on the topic of living in wisdom. In summary of last week, in order to disentangle the tangle, that is, to cure the human pathology, the Buddha asks us to try to understand our world of experience, also known as the phenomenal world, and understand the extent that we ourselves fabricate that world. For the Buddha, all things arise in dependence on conditions, and our job is to understand the conditions for what causes suffering in that world. The wisdom teachings are challenging. For this reason, you'll have to hold on to your hats. I've decided to make this easier by splitting what would have been a long talk into 2 short talks. Hopefully, you'll listen to each twice. About unsubstantiality. The 3 qualities of impermanence, suffering, and non-self remind us of the primary human absurdity. This is that we can fabricate the world out there in our own minds in a certain way. Then we take what we have fabricated seriously as something real and substantial. Then we become infatuated with its objects and crave them. This is like Pygmalion of Greek legend. We generally don't see this, for we're convinced that we have immediate and effortless access to the world out there, which is there even if no one is experiencing it at the moment. We think that we just need to show up and there it is, but thinking this is just another experience, one that the mind fabricates. To better see the unreliability of our experience of the world out there, we can develop our awareness of the process of fabrication as we engage in it. In this way, we don't take the world out there so seriously. To do this, the Buddha suggests that we segment our experiences into 5 categories. The 5 aggregates serve to classify phenomena according to epistemic or cognitive faculties of form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness. Keeping the 5 aggregates in mind reminds us that we are, at each step, observing experiences that are mentally conditioned. Remember, mind precedes all phenomena. A form is raw sense data, such as shapes and colors, noise, odors, something that impinges on experience as if from outside. A feeling is an affective tone of experience, particularly where it falls on the like-dislike scale. A perception is a recognition of familiarity as an exemplar of something recollected. It typically gives something a name. A formation is a conditioned composite of phenomena such as gadgets, impulses, patterns, analyses, plans. It entails choice and so includes karmic activities. An instance of consciousness is a movement of mind, including qualities like focus and attention, with consistent reference to things outside of itself. In other words, we are conscious of something. The aggregates break experience into 5 categories of ascending cognitive complexity. In fact, these categories are not discrete, but often highlight different facets of the same phenomena. For instance, nothing we experience can be totally independent of consciousness. Moreover, everything we perceive is a formation, which is to say, fabricated. An instance of consciousness is also a formation. Incidentally, an instance of consciousness, like everything else, simply arises in one moment and is gone in the next. It's important to bear this in mind, otherwise we have a tendency to view consciousness as something fixed, or even to view consciousness as me, the experiencer. When we take the world out there seriously, we take it as real and begin to attach to the things we find there as me and mine. This further entangles us in samsara, as we will see shortly. Mindful of the mental component of all phenomena, we are less apt to take the world out there seriously. The Buddha brings this unskillful tendency to a head in an extremely clever way by intersecting two rather contrary categories. Aggregates of attachment are cognitively or epistemically classified phenomena which we appropriate as me or mine. Normally, we attach to things, that is, we appropriate or identify with them, because we think they exist out there. But we cannot attach to what we don't experience. When we classify them or their various attractions according to their mental conditions, the result is that we see, like shoddy merchandise, the cognitive seams left from the fabrication of our most cherished things of the world out there. We're furthermore asked to consider, as if to drive this point home, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not of me, I am not of this. In this way, we begin to pull back from fabricating a world out there, eventually failing to see things as real, given, fixed, or existing in themselves. This process is consummated through right mental composure, which shifts temporarily our cognitive faculties themselves. As we learn to fabricate less, and we learn to experience things as empty of substantial existence. Emptiness is the experience of a phenomenon as lacking substantial existence, or a self, or anything that pertains to a self. In emptiness, there is nothing specific out there to cling to. The role of the senses. Without the sense faculties, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, or touch, we would fail to experience a world out there. But wait, even if the five senses were cut off, we would still experience a world in here, wouldn't we? Yes, that is why in Buddhism, rather than just the five physical senses, we also have a sixth sense, a mind sense, through which we experience our inner thoughts and emotions, mental processes, dreams, and so on. Accordingly, we array the world in terms of the sixfold sphere, which arrays phenomena as conditioned by one of the six sense faculties. For instance, in the eye sphere, we have eye form, eye consciousness, eye contact, and whatever arises with eye contact as a condition. Form is the object out there of sight that falls on the eye from which eye consciousness arises. In other words, form plus eye gives rise to eye consciousness. This event is called contact, and once contact occurs, a series of factors dependent on contact arise in relation to the form imputed to exist out there. Feeling about it, craving it, thinking about it, and so on. This passage is repeated with respect to ear, nose, and so on. The six sense spheres thereby highlight the senses as initiators of experience in the causal network constituting our samsaric condition. In the six, the world has arisen. In the six, it holds concourse. On the six, themselves depending. In the six, it has woes. The sixfold sphere serves much of the same function as the aggregates in reminding us of the inner origins of our experiential world. Also, it points a way to control our experience at will. We guard the senses when we simply look the other way, for instance, to avoid lust. The sense of self generally originates in the bifurcation implied by contact, along with the conviction that there is an out there. The I is that in the world by which one is a perceiver of the world, a conceiver of the world. What is then said here for the I is then said for the ear, for the nose, for the tongue, for the body, and for the mind. Accordingly, we train to see the I and so on as impermanent, suffering, and not self as empty. Dependent co-arising. Conditionality is described as a relation between a phenomenon and its cause or its set of conditions. But when scaled up into a network of such relations, the resulting system can exhibit a quite complex dynamic, which can be difficult to track with many loops and collateral effects. Dependent co-arising is the arising of a network of phenomena together through multiple relations of conditionality among those phenomena. However, the early Buddhist texts prefer to talk about linear chains of dependent co-arising, leaving most of the many branches implicit, as in all things being equal. They do this by attributing a single condition to a single effect, even when, properly speaking, any single factor virtually always has multiple conditions, as if fire were caused by fuel alone. This is clearly for expository clarity. The co-independent co-arising reminds us that we are simplifying. Accordingly, there are many references to linear causal chains of this kind in early Buddhism, each of which should really be understood as a thread through a dense causal net of contingency. Most often, dependent co-arising is used to refer to one specific causal chain, which we'll call the standard chain of 12 links as follows. Ignorance gives rise to formations, gives rise to consciousness, gives rise to name and form, gives rise to sixfold sphere, gives rise to contact, gives rise to feeling, gives rise to craving, gives rise to attachment, gives rise to becoming, gives rise to birth, gives rise to this mass of suffering. A thin thread through the dense snarl of conditionality, this particular chain wends its way through the center of Buddhist psychology. It therefore exposes the arising, step by step, of the near universal pathology that characterizes the human condition. The chain not only describes the arising of the human pathology, but also what we do about it. Our practice is directed at weakening or breaking its various problematic links until the entire chain ceases to function. A given link might cease just like a fire ceases when deprived of one of its conditions, such as fuel. The practice of the Noble Eightfold Path weakens all links, a kind of universal elixir for all that ails us. The removal of ignorance as the first link results in the utter breakdown of the entire chain. This is to say that a complete understanding of what in our phenomenal world ails us, and why suffices to liberate us from all of our woes. The links from ignorance to contact have to do with how we mistakenly conceptualize the world. That is, they have to do with delusion. The links from feeling to attachment have to do with how we respond emotionally to what we have conceptualized and taken seriously, particularly with greed and aversion. The links from becoming to this entire mass of suffering have to do with how we consolidate a full personal identity, which then compounds our delusion, then how we perpetuate that identity into future lives. The standard 12-link chain of dependent co-arising is deceptively simple, but when we actually understand the various factors involved, described in many discourses, we find that their dynamics is quite complex, with many branches, loops, and overlapping instantiations of the chain. The chain explains how the illusory sense of personal identity in all of its contingent complexity emerges step by step. The Buddha, in describing this chain, presented us with a most profound model of the common dysfunctional mind. Having revealed something of its logic and its method of disrupting that causal chain, we don't have time in this brief introduction to go into the depths of this far-reaching teaching. There's a lot to track here, but hey, we've got lifetimes to do it.
Further resources related to this course, Mindfulness, Where Dharma Meets Practice, are available at Sitagu, that is Sitagu, sitagu.org/shortlinks/mindful.